everyone, and welcome back to the Your Biggest Fangirl podcast. I am one of your hosts, Victoria Male. I am an assistant at a Hollywood production company with a major film franchise, and I am the 10 Rules of Fangirling creator and abider most of the time.
And I am your other host, Kristen Chavez. I'm a media specialist at a major university on the East Coast, but I am also a full-time fangirl. And because we're on separate coasts, you'll notice that our episode is a little bit different today. Rather than having just one guest, we have seven. This is because Victoria has recently returned from WonderCon 2018 in Anaheim, California, without me, where she took the Your Biggest Fangirl podcast to the field.
I would just like to say that I did not go to Heroes and Villains with you, and no one was stopping you from flying out to California. I'm just putting that out there. I'm just saying it.
Okay, fine. I guess that's fair. But before we get to know our new guests, Victoria, what was a convention highlight for you?
A convention highlight for me, there were a ton. What I loved about WonderCon was how awesome it was, but how accessible everything was as well. The only convention I'd been to, and it was a big reason why I wanted to come to WonderCon, because I've only been to San Diego Comic-Con, which is complete sensory overload, and there's so many people, and even though the energy there is amazing and great and a ton of fun, it's a lot, and it's impossible to get into panels, and you're camping out all night to get into Hall H. So something I loved about WonderCon is it's very well run. They did a great job at getting everyone to the convention center, inside the convention center, onto the convention floor. And then after we interviewed our final guest, who you'll hear from very soon, I wanted to run down to a book signing by E.K. Johnston, who wrote the Ahsoka novel, among many awesome books. She's amazing. And it was starting in like 10-15 minutes, and I go, oh my gosh, the line's gonna be around the corner. There's no way I'm getting in. But since Kristen couldn't join me, I was like, oh God, I need to get her book signed. And I get there, and there's only a couple people. And I was like, oh, this is new for me. Like, and I just went right up to EK, and she was so lovely, and we fangirled out over her universe and their awesome activewear, and she signed the book for Kristen, and it was so amazing. I also, while I was at WonderCon, got to meet one of our former guests from the podcast, Dr. Janina Scarlett, in person, which was wonderful. She signed my copy of Superhero Therapy, and she's an awesome clinical psychologist who infuses geek culture into her therapy practice, and everyone should go back and listen to her episode. Episode 10 it is, I believe. So those were a couple highlights for me, other than all the amazing women I got to interview while I was there. I also found a lot of great comic books, and it was great to discover these smaller publishers and find a lot of really exciting titles.
That's amazing. I'm glad you had such a great time. Do you have any advice for someone that's trying to shift from like going from a major one like Comic-Con, like the big one, to going to something like WonderCon? Like, what are maybe the pros and cons for choosing one over the other?
I am the literal definition of extra, so I made a schedule of everything I was going to do. The nice thing going to a smaller con rather than a bigger con is that you can actually realistically do a lot more stuff, because I always think you should plan. But when you're planning for a smaller con, you actually can put more things on your docket. So that's something to be aware of. Since Anaheim and San Diego are still in Southern California, I still felt like the guests were of a similar quality. I don't think they had as big of actors at WonderCon. I mean, they have the cast of the new Krypton show, which was awesome. I didn't get to see them, but it's not like they're bringing Henry Cavill and the Avengers. But even so, something about that I really liked is you still get to meet really cool creators, but who aren't maybe as commercially well known. Again, like I was saying, I really loved meeting people who worked at these independent comic publishers, as well as different writers. And so that's advice I would give, is don't be afraid to fill up your docket a little more. I still think you should get there obnoxiously early. The convention doors opened at 10. I was in Anaheim by 8. And then I was shuttled in, and I was in line to get in by 8:30. And they actually started letting people in early. So you never know what could happen if you plan ahead and get there early. I had so much on my docket that I didn't stop for lunch, or I brought my own snacks and like didn't buy lunch. But I think that's also important too, is like, cause you're running around and it's exhausting in a way, not just from the walking, but cause you're taking in so much stimuli. So I would also say bring snacks and a water bottle so you can like keep yourself fueled and experience the convention to its fullest without collapsing like at 2 p.m.
Oh, I totally understand that. I think that's one thing that I always want to prepare for is like, what kind of snacks can I bring? How many is too many? I don't think there is such a thing as too many snacks. But yeah, I think even like having a schedule for yourself like that, I don't think that's being extra. I think that's just being prepared. And, you know, I think that goes hand in hand with our worlds of fangirling. So, well, while you were there, you were able to meet a lot new women to fangirl over. So I'm going to introduce our first guest, who is Amy Meberson. She's a licensed artist with Disney, and you may be familiar with a very popular Pocket Princesses series on social media, where she reimagines our favorite Disney princesses as friends and roommates in a fun comic form.
So to be a licensed artist with a brand like Disney is a fangirl's dream. How is that relationship forged?
I get asked all the time, it's like, how do you get to work for Disney? And honestly, there's 100 different ways you could be a creative and work for Disney in some way, whether it's, you know, doing the art in the galleries or working for their licensees, which is most of where my works come from. I work on comic books and toy design and fine art, which are done by licensees of the Walt Disney Company. So that's often a way that you can kind of get in, because even if you're not working directly for Disney, people at Disney Approvals are still seeing your work, and it's all about getting eyes on your work. But I mean, I'm also a big believer in just posting art on the internet, art that you love doing, because art directors and stuff do look. And if your art is good and you label yourself well and you make yourself very easy to find, then you can often get breaks that way. Like I got my break at Hasbro doing toy design because of the fan comic Pocket Princesses. A designer saw my stuff and they say, I love that little princess thing. Could you do something like that with Equestria Girls? And I went, yes, absolutely. And I've been working for Hasbro ever since. So sometimes a lot of it is right place, right time. So there is unfortunately no magic trick to it.
That's still awesome advice. And speaking of Pocket Princesses, my partner Kristen and I are big fans. Do you have a favorite character to draw?
To draw, I tend to draw Ariel a lot. Usually if I want to like practice like a new painting technique or something, I will usually do Ariel because she's very easy. She's like three colors. She's just all swishy curves and everything. Cartooning wise, she's this colossal goofball, so you can usually have a lot more fun with her. But I love them all. I mean, I love Elsa's my girl, even though she's got one of the most elaborate outfits to draw, so that bit's a little tedious. But in terms of Pocket Princesses and just when I'm creating something with the princesses, I really don't have a favorite. It's like, I love them all.
What do you fangirl over?
What do I fangirl over? I mean, I fangirl over the company I work for. I mean, Disney have my heart and soul, basically. It's easy to say they're just a big faceless entertainment corporation, but I mean, you know, the stuff doesn't get made without creators with passion in there getting it done and creating the stuff. So, you know, I don't know. I'm a fairly understated person. I don't fangirl squee over a lot of stuff. I fangirl over craft beer. That's something. But I'm very protective of the princesses. I'm just always kind of keeping an eye on my girls and what the company's doing with them. And there's some really cool stuff coming. And yeah.
So exciting. Okay. So what does it mean to you to be a fan then?
Yeah, you just love something, basically. It's easy. You can love something so much that sometimes it can get a little out of hand and you start sort of thinking like you own it. And that's when certain parts of fandom can start, you know, abusing that, and get stuff like showrunners and the actual creators being harassed because something is so means so much to you that you start to think you own it. And I mean, it's not. I mean, these characters belong to everybody.
Since you've done so much work with Disney, would you rather be a Disney princess / hero or a Disney villain?
Oh, I'm a princess. Yeah. It's like the villains have their fans, and you know, Maleficent and Ursula are far and away the most popular villains that we get asked to do. And yeah, they're badass ladies, you know. They're you know, not very nice, but no, I was a goody two shoes growing up. I'm a good girl, so it's like I love my princesses.
Me too.
People tend to criticize the princesses for sort of tropes which are really not accurate. They sort of want to buy into a stereotype of what they think a Disney princess is, when it's actually not. They're actually a lot more nuanced than that.
Great.
I'm very protective of them.
I love it. Well, Amy, thank you so much for your time and your insights. Where can we find you on social media and support your work?
Okay, I mean, I'm most active on Twitter and Instagram, and it's just my name, Amy Meberson. I post Pocket Princesses once a week on Facebook. So most of the time, if I don't post a lot of art, it's probably because I'm busy actually working on art I can't show everybody yet. But yeah, usually Twitter or Instagram is usually where you can find me.
Amazing, thank you so much.
Chrissy Zullo is a comic book artist with credits including covers for Cinderella from Fabletown with Love, Hack Slash, and Madame Xanadu number 26. She was first recognized by an editor at the DC Talent Search at San Diego Comic Con in 2008. Victoria checks in with her about how she made her start.
Chrissy, can you tell us about your experience participating in the DC Talent Search and what's your advice to creators who are trying to break into the industry?
So basically what I did is I went to art school. I had put a portfolio together of comic book covers that I would do if I was to be a comic book artist. I went to Comic-Con, submitted a portfolio when DC was doing talent searches, and I met with an editor that way. And from then on, I just would send her stuff through email, showing her what I had been keeping up with, and she got me a job that way. But my best advice, I think, to any artist that's trying to break into the industry today is to, you know, get your art out there as much as possible through social media, sites like Instagram, Tumblr. Get a table at Artist Alley. Sometimes editors are just walking around at these cons, and they find artists that way just by having your own table at a show. So I think basically the more exposure that you can do, the better. Try to show your art as much as possible. If you can, like every day, try to post something new, because the more you post, the better shot you would have.
Oh my gosh, that's great advice. Thanks so much. So what do you cite as your influences for your distinctive style of lovely art?
I definitely have a sort of like Eastern and Western influences. Like, I love Disney cartoons growing up. I love anime and I love American comics. And I think I just kind of take a little bit from all the things I love and like subconsciously merge it together. Growing up, I loved Disney animation. I wanted to be a Disney artist. And then I got into American comics and I got into a lot of anime and manga. And so I think all those things just kind of come together and formed my style, I guess.
Great. That was kind of our next question. What do you fangirl over? Is there anything you fangirl over particularly harder than others?
Definitely anything Wonder Woman. I have this weird obsession with like Yetis and Wampas. So anything like Star Wars, I love. I don't know. I get really into like so many things, so many different anime, especially like all the Miyazaki movies and anything Disney I love.
We love it. So what does it mean to you to be a fan?
I think it's just like we fan over things because I feel like we see ourselves or things in our life or things that we want to be in these characters that we love. So I think it's just when you find something that you can really relate to and really inspire to be, I think that's why we fan out over things or geek out over things like that.
Would you rather have the best cosplay at a convention, but you have to wear it every day of your life? Or would you rather have a damning wardrobe malfunction, but you can return to street clothes?
The damning wardrobe malfunction. I don't know, if I had to wear the same thing every day, even if it was really cool, I'd probably just long for something different, I guess.
Cool. And then where can we find you on social media and support your work?
Basically, I think everything is my name. So Chrissy Zullo, like on Instagram. I'm on Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, Facebook. And then I also have a little YouTube channel where I try to upload art tutorials and process videos.
So. Oh my gosh, so cool. Thank you so much for letting us interview you.
Now for our next guest. Storyboard artist and illustrator Amy Major Steinberger's dream of working in animation came to fruition when she got her professional start in character layout on Futurama. While she works in animation, she continues to exercise her creative passions through costuming and gives some insight about balancing the two.
So you both illustrate and create cosplay / historic recreations. Do you see cosplay and animation illustrating informing each other in your work?
Sometimes I do a little bit of costume design within storyboarding. Like, if there's something that's historically based in the episode I'm working on, somebody might be like, hey, I know you do that nerdy costume stuff. What do you think about this thing? And then I'll say, well, actually, here's this painting of a weird nightgown from the 1800s or whatever, and they might use a little bit of it. But, I mean, most of the character design I don't really do. That's somebody else's job, but sometimes they'll be like, hey, nerd, I know you know about that, so.
Amazing. You've had to balance your creativity in your professional work in animation and when doing original illustrations and cosplay. How do you balance the two so as not to get creatively burnt out?
I really feel like it's good to have hobbies that are not the thing that you do professionally. So because my job is drawing all the time, I feel like creatively, it's a good catharsis to do something that's creative, but it's not drawing, it's not using my hand. Well, I mean, I use my hands to sew, but it's not the same movement, like the same repetitive stress type thing. So I feel like it's a good stress relief for me to do costuming. I don't do as much costuming as I did when I was like 21 and could stay up all night, you know, sewing and being a crazy person, but I try to find balance by occasionally I will take a break and I'll sew for a while, or I'll do, you know, like maybe one big costume a year instead of five big costumes a year or something like that. So I do like maybe one if I have time. And I guess with my personal artwork, I feel like I really don't want to go too long without doing something that I really like, because in animation you're always drawing what somebody else wants you to draw. So it's fun for me to draw something that is personal to me, and I guess it's also sort of a stress relief. And I definitely learn a lot from doing my personal work, because it's usually more detailed or kind of embellished with stuff, and I think that comes from like costuming a little bit. Like I just like to cover things with lots of lace and little details and things like that. So
what do you fangirl over?
Cats. I like cats a lot. Dogs are great too. I really like beautiful costumes. I mean, I really like Star Wars. I fangirl over comic artists that I really, really like. Mike Mignola from Hellboy, even though his style is like totally different from mine, I feel like I learn a lot from the layout of it and use of blacks and stuff like that. And other artists that are sort of in the same realm as me, like doing storyboards or doing like really cool fan art. I'm like, oh my God, that new picture you drew is so amazing. It like makes me want to make something better.
That's awesome. Would you rather have the best cosplay at a convention, but you have to wear it every day of your life? Or would you rather have a damning wardrobe malfunction, but you can return to street clothes?
I would totally just wear street clothes. I guess I'm pretty lazy most days, and then occasionally I get like crazy fancy, and then I'm like, okay, back to wearing t-shirts. So
thank you so much. Where can we find you on social media and support your work?
So most of my online names are Amy Kitty, which is A-I-M-E-E Kitty, and then Amy Kitty Art on Instagram, and you can find me at amymajor.com.
Our next guest is Lindsay Reimer, who is a gamer, artist, and illustrator. She has developed assets for mobile games such as Jetpack Fighter, Blabcake Messenger, and she's also worked on other games such as WWE Champions, Breaking Bad, Empire, and more.
All right, we're here with Lindsay Reimer. So how did your passion for gaming and drawing begin, and did they always intertwine?
A little bit. So I definitely grew up gaming, and I was a massive nerd growing up, and I grew up playing, you know, like the NES and the SNES, and fell in love with RPGs like Secret of Mana, and then I eventually started playing website games like Neopets and Gaia Online, and eventually started doing community stuff with those where I would draw in the forums. So I don't know how familiar you are with Gaia Online, but so it was an avatar-based forum where you could dress up your avatar, but they had a whole roleplay section, and I would draw and post on that forum and get actual art critique from these people, because we all just wanted to get better. And I realized that, oh, like, I could actually contribute to this. This is pretty cool, like making signatures and banners and stuff for people in these forums. And then I eventually started to play Ragnarok Online, which is like a big, you know, MMORPG. So I ended up befriending the people who ran the private server, and they let me do like custom NPC art for the game, like for events and stuff. And I'm like, oh, I can do stuff for games, that's pretty cool. And I was pretty young, I was like 13 at the time. It was really awesome of them. Like looking back on it, the art probably wasn't fantastic, but it was super, super supportive. I thought it was pretty cool.
Are there any unique challenges or opportunities being a female in a traditionally male-dominated space?
It's definitely getting much better than it has been, but it's an uphill battle as far as, you know, there's a lot of prejudices that are unfortunately still ingrained in a lot of studios. And it really, especially with games, it varies from studio to studio, because it really is different, and the culture and the team is very different everywhere you go. Like even within the same studio, the culture could be different. Where I am right now, like, it's fantastic. Like, everyone's super supportive. For here, actually, they all wished me very well. They were like, oh, have fun, you know, like, make lots of friends and, like, you know, have fun in California. And when I did ECC a few weeks ago, they all came to visit me on lunch. Like, it was super nice. Not that my past experiences have been bad, per se, but they weren't as supportive in that specific sense. What I really like is that studios are making an effort to have more diversity, because they want to be seen for the next generation. If people of a diverse background are actually making the stuff that they're putting out there, more of those people will want to come in and diversify even more. So I'm pretty excited for where it's going, but it's definitely not fantastically easy at this moment.
So what do you fangirl over? We talked about RPG and gaming a bit.
Oh my gosh, everything. I really like comics, cartoons, anime, games. I do a lot of things. There's so many artists here that I fangirl over as well. But what's really cool is that, so the games I grew up with, I work with people who worked on that stuff, like in my day to day, and that's pretty freaking awesome. Like, I also for animation, like, I work with a guy who worked on Tales of the Crypt, and I'm like animated it. And I'm like, oh, this is so cool. I get to work with you every day. Getting to learn all the behind the scenes stories that never make public, not that they're anything bad, but like really just fun little coffee conversations while you're waiting. It's pretty cool.
Amazing. Every fangirl's dream. So what does it mean to you to be a fan?
To be a fan, I want to support the media that I'm going after, right? And I want to know more about the process. Before I got into games, I definitely didn't know that it was a whole team of people that make stuff. Everyone thinks that a game is made by a single person, or a comic is made by a single person. It's not always true. Like, you know, especially in comics too, like there are publishers and there's essentially someone doing like the colors, the flats, like even, so I flat for Amulet and I'm one of 10 flatters and I only flatted a few pages. You know, there's a whole bunch of colorists, like there's a team that works on that one particular comic, and that's amazing to me. You always thought it's just one person. And you kind of gain a bigger appreciation for the things that you already love.
Oh, what a lovely answer. Would you rather wait in line for your favorite panel only to miss it and come back next year? Or would you rather meet your icons, break the rules, and then be banned for life?
Oh, man. I would probably come back next year. I'm kind of a weenie. I want to see them again and again. I'm okay seeing them from afar and then one day seeing them.
So where can we find you on social media and support all your awesome work?
My website is www.lindsay-reimer.com, but you can also find me on Instagram at Rinnychu, R-I-N-N-Y-C-H-U. I'm also on Twitter, same handle, all the good stuff.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Our next guest is Crystal Kahn. She is a story artist with a portfolio ranging from doing storyboards for Marvel Spider-Man and Netflix's Legend Quest to writing her own comic books.
So Crystal, how does one become a story artist, or how did you get into being a story artist?
I moved out to Los Angeles about 4.5 years ago, and I started taking classes over at Concept Design Academy. Through building a portfolio at that school, I ended up having something that was worthy to get like a revisionist job. And also, like, I started meeting people at that school who were also working professionals. And so like they'd be working professionals and other fellow students, and you make friends with them, and then eventually they'll start like being like, hey, like, I know this cool girl, why don't I recommend them for storyboards? And so that's how I got my first revisionist job, and then I started getting my freelance work, and now I'm over at DreamWorks TV.
Not too shabby. So Lindsay was telling us that storyboarding is actually also a traditionally male-dominated space. Can you tell us what are some unique maybe challenges you face or opportunities you have in that career?
Statistically, there are more men in animation in general because it was originally a male-dominated field. More recently, there have been more strides to be more inclusive in hiring more women, and there's a lot of efforts over in women in animation to get, I think, 50-50 by 2020. It's still an admirable goal. I'm not really sure we'll make it, but, you know, it's kind of cool. But I think the more that we create these stories that include more people, the more we inspire the next generation of kids to come in and, like, try to be within animation or video games or any of these media, and then eventually we'll have a more inclusive group of people that work in the industry.
We are so curious. Do you have a set process for when you're bringing a story to life? What is it like collaborating with the other storytellers?
Typically what happens is that depending on what show you work on, you either receive a script or at least an outline. From there, you go through the script a few times and kind of figure out, well, like, maybe this is an important moment I need to showcase. This is an important thing I need to show. What are the power dynamics in this scene? What am I trying to tell with the story, but with pictures? They already gave me the words, so what do I do from there? Typically, at least with the schedule that we have, I have about 2 weeks to do thumbnails, and then another 2 weeks to do the rest of it, essentially. I pitch it, and then I give notes. It's a very interesting process because I'm generally actually very shy when it comes to like doing presentations and stuff. So it's been a constant process of me getting over my anxiety of fear of like performing in front of people, but since I don't have to look at them, I kind of pretend they're not there. And then another 2 more weeks to just clean it up after they give me a bunch of notes to fix up. You just keep going through the process over and over again until you're done with the season.
That's so cool. What do you fangirl over?
Oh boy. I really do love animation overall. I love anime. I love cartoons from here. I love watching Cartoon Network shows. I love watching DreamWorks shows. I love watching everything. There's always something you can find inspiration from. I'm a huge nerd. I also love playing video games. Yeah. Probably avidly a Digimon, Professor Layton, Ace Attorney fan, and anything around that like similar genre, like I'm just totally into it. The caveat is that now that I work within industry, I don't have much time to watch the things that I want to watch, but whatever I do, I always have my brain on thinking about, oh, like, this is really cool, of a story and an idea and, like, how they tell the story. Like, there's always something to learn when you're watching these things.
What does it mean to you to be a fan, especially now that you're working in the industry as well?
It's kind of interesting because I understand both sides of the table now, like, the process behind making these cartoons that people love, but also being a fan of the work. Now it's more like, oh, I really love the work that my friends do. They're all working within industry at this point. Or meeting people who have been in the industry for so long, at least like 20, 30 years, and you get to actually have these one-on-one conversations with people who created the things you grew up on. And it's really kind of amazing the stories they tell you behind the scenes. There's a lot to learn from there.
For sure. Would you rather wait in line for your favorite panel only to miss it and come back next year? Or would you rather meet your icons and then be banned for life?
I would probably wait in line because there's always a next time kind of thing. You'd be disappointed for the first time, but at least you could kind of come back and try again and plan better. But also because I've done so many conventions at this point, I'm kind of like, oh, cool. Well, they're back here again, aren't they?
I love it. So where can we find you on social media and support your work?
You can find me either by Googling my name, Crystal Can, or you could go by my very cute internet handle from when I was 12, which is Wizard of Kitty. I can't get rid of it because I have a lot of old internet friends that I still want them to be able to find me and be like, oh, where is she now?
Thank you so, so much.
Our next guest, Melissa Paliuca, is a California illustrator and creator of the comic book series Above the Clouds, which tells two intertwining stories, the adventures of a hero who must save a dying world and a girl who must convince the author to finish what he has started.
So Melissa, tell us, what was your inspiration for Above the Clouds?
Well, before Above the Clouds, I was trying to work on this other story, and I realized it wasn't going anywhere, and it was just an epic mess. Or just, I tried to make it too big. So Above the Clouds started as trying to tell a shorter story and end up not being so short because it's now like over 250 pages. But I was really inspired by Irish lore and Norse mythology, and I just had fun playing with that world. And yeah, I one day just started drawing a few characters. And I'm like, I really like these characters. And the next day I drew two pages out. I'm like, okay, this is going somewhere. And it's just so crazy how I didn't stop after those two pages, just kept going.
So early on in Above the Clouds, Eileen becomes engrossed in Kian's story, and she's desperate for him to continue the story while he's reluctant and embarrassed. Did you identify with one character more than the other when you were writing this? Were you more like Eileen, where you're like, I want it to keep going, or were you more hesitant to continue?
When you're creating characters, I guess there's parts of you that always come out. Like with any art, part of you always is a part of what you're making. And so with the creative process, there's a part of you that's afraid to put it out there and see how people respond. And I guess I identify a lot with Kian, where you're just kind of embarrassed and it seems irrational and people don't understand, like, why aren't you sharing it? But it's to the artist, I guess it's real. And I hope everyone has an Eileen in their life where they're excited about what you do and they believe in you. And I feel like I was very fortunate that I did have an Eileen in my life, like my dad and my friends around me who did push me. And so I think that's kind of where Eileen comes from, is that one person who always believes in you.
It's a beautiful answer. What do you fangirl over?
Oh man. So right now I'm a huge book reader and I'm a huge fangirl for Ilona Andrews. It's a husband-wife team that does this really awesome urban fantasy, and they do the story about this really strong woman. I think that's what I gravitate towards, this really strong woman who are doing their thing and they're fighting and kicking butt. And
I'm all about that. So what does it mean to you to be a fan?
To be a fan is to just love. You just have that love for the characters, you identify with them, you want to support the creators, you believe in what they're doing, and yeah, you just want to keep cheering them on. To be a fan is to cheer people on.
I love that. Would you rather wait in line for your favorite panel only to miss it and come back next year, or would you rather meet your icons and then be banned for life?
I think the first one. because then you have that feeling of opportunity in the future, come back and maybe meet them. Yeah, it'd be sad to be banned forever. Like outcasted, like, oh.
Where can we find you on social media and support your work?
You can find me as Teacup B on Twitter. I'm Dark Sun Rose on Instagram. It's kind of crazy right now. My main website's the best one, and that's M is in Melissa, P is in Paul, AGLUICA.com.
And if you've enjoyed Above the Clouds as much as I have, you can support Melissa in producing a hardbound edition through a Kickstarter campaign. We'll have a link on our website. You can also start reading the comic online now at atcloudscomic.com.
For our final guest, we have a woman that many fangirls know and love. We are still squeeing over the fact we got her to be a guest on our podcast. And without further ado...
Okay, everyone, I am with a woman who needs no introduction, but I'll give her a quick one. She's the creator of her universe, the voice of Ahsoka Tano, and one of our fangirl role models, lady bosses, the queen of fangirl fashion, Ashley Eckstein. So, Ashley, fangirling has come a long way. We're embracing it now more publicly and proudly than ever. And her universe is a big part of that messaging for girls and women to embrace what they love and what they fangirl over. What are some of the challenges you still see for fangirls of all ages and fandoms? What work still needs to be done?
Well, we've come such a long way. Obviously, you know, since her universe started, it launched in 2010. And back then, all the product was still for men and boys. And more importantly than the product, the main reason I started her universe was I just wanted a safe community where girls could be celebrated for liking these properties that we all love so much. And at the time, women and girls were being bullied and being bullied terribly. And so that was the main reason why I started her universe, is I thought maybe if we had more merchandise for women to wear where they felt confident and comfortable and they were like, hey, this is made for me, then fangirls would feel more comfortable to step into the spotlight and say, you know what? I'm here and I'm proud of it and I'm here to stay. And we've come such a long way. I mean, now we're living in a world where the Wonder Woman film is one of the top films of all time. You know, and for the longest time, they wouldn't make it. The lead of the new Star Wars franchise is a girl. It's really an exciting time to be a fangirl, but I will say we still have a long time to go. It's not equal, and that's all we've ever wanted. We've just wanted to say that this world is not just for men, it's not just for women, it's for everyone. And so I think the second that we're no longer asking that question, because it's just obvious that it's for everyone, is when I feel like the job, well, and the job's never really done, but it's like then the job will be done. But we've made so many strides, and I'm so proud to be a fangirl. It's an exciting time.
For sure. So as you mentioned, we've had amazing female heroes front and center in the mainstream in the past year. Wonder Woman, Rey, and of course Ahsoka with Hera and Sabine in Rebels. As someone who brought such a character to life who wasn't just groundbreaking, but also exceedingly popular and respected in the fandom, what does that say about the trend of not only having strong female characters and role models, but having them in stories that resonate beyond cult followings and non-mainstream audiences?
I think representation is so important. And so having these strong female characters be expected now, be commonplace, it's going to do so much good in the world. I mean, Ahsoka at the time was groundbreaking because she was the first female Jedi that was a lead in the Star Wars universe. That was unheard of at the time. Now, like you said, you know, you were able to list off all of these strong female characters that have become a part of the mainstream, and that's so exciting. I actually left the movie theater after watching Black Panther, and I got really emotional because I thought, you know what? I'm so excited for young fangirls, especially young African-American fangirls, that have all of those kick-butt characters to look up to. I think of all the young girls that are looking up to Shuri now. I love Shuri. I want to be Shuri. And the fact that they can look up to Shuri now and be like, wow, look at her. I can be just like her. It's so exciting. So I think it's all about representation. When girls see a character that they can be like, they believe that they can be her or be a version of her. And it's just when they don't have those examples, sometimes they don't even know that those opportunities exist. And I don't mean, you know, especially Ahsoka or Hera, you know, you're not going to be a Jedi in a galaxy far, far away. But I constantly ask myself on a regular basis, in certain situations, I ask myself, what would Ahsoka do? Because I want to be a real life version of Ahsoka. What's my everyday version of Ahsoka? What would Ahsoka do in certain situations? So, you know, it's exciting. There's so many options for girls to look up to now.
Well, we think you're crushing it on the real life Ahsoka front. So on our show, we talk a lot about blending your professional life and your fandom or pop culture interests, and you've literally written the book on that. What advice can you give to fangirls who are aspiring to make their passion their profession?
You know, I actually say when you combine passion and confidence, it's a superpower, and you can do anything with passion and confidence. If you have a passion in something, you just have to go for it, because anything can happen, and especially when it becomes your profession. I still pinch myself that I get to call this work, that I get to call being the voice of Ahsoka work, that I get to call designing a collection, you know, in Hot Topic or in Disney Parks work. It's really a dream come true. So I do encourage fans to follow their passion, because to wake up every day and do something that you love, that you're passionate about, is really a dream. And you know, I say in the book, I was inspired by the author Simon Sinek, and his book Start With Why. Find your why. Find why you're doing something, what makes you tick, what your passion is, and follow that. And it's the perfect world if it can turn into your profession.
So what does it mean to you to be a fan?
So many things. For me, I recognize that being the voice of Ahsoka and being a Star Wars character is a responsibility. I quickly saw that. It was no longer about me. It was about, I need to honor this franchise, and I need to honor the opportunity that's been given to me. That's what it came to for me, where I realized, okay, I need to honor Ahsoka and be a real-life version of her. And so for me, being a fan is a responsibility to pay it forward. It's a responsibility to use the platform that I've been given to continue to spread the word and spread positivity and spread the messages of these incredible characters. That's, I would say, for me, my next chapter with fandom. I talked on the panel today about being a dream warrior, and that's just something I call a person who fiercely goes out there and makes their dream come true or makes other dreams come true. And I'm asking everybody to be a dream warrior with me and go help spread the message, because there's so much negative stuff going on in the world today that, to me, the only way, my way of dealing with it, is to combat it with positive.
Well, you're certainly our dream warrior, so we're going to take the mantle up and spread it with our podcast and wearing our Her Universe stuff all around. Can you share with us one of your finest moments of fangirling? I'm sure the highlight reel is extensive.
Oh my goodness. Well, as you heard me talk on the panel, I'm such a Disney nut. So getting to work with Disney in the way that I have has been a dream come true. And I think this year, I have to say, being an author is something I never thought I would say. I said, actually, I would never write a book. So to be standing here saying that I wrote a book for Disney is literally words that I never thought would come out of my mouth. I think that's the thing I'm most excited about, is I had my panic moment when I had to sit down and actually write it. I shut down for like 2 days. I bought a bunch of Oreos. I ate a lot of them. I took a nap. And then I woke up and said, okay, I can do this. And I just started writing. And now to be here and say that I did it, I did something that I never thought possible, that I wasn't capable of, and that Disney is allowing me to help spread their message, is a dream come true. So again, the fact that I'm standing here saying that I'm an author of a Disney book proves that anything is possible, because that's one thing I would have told you was impossible.
Well, we're so excited for the book, and the panel had so many awesome things for Her Universe coming up this year. Can you tell us a couple of things that you're really looking forward to with the brand?
Well, obviously the collection by the fashion show winners is, you know, I would say my favorite collection of the year, because it's not ours. It's the designers. And that's what I always wanted from the Her Universe fashion show, is to provide a platform and provide opportunities. So to see those designers up on stage and hear them talk about their collection literally makes my heart burst. That's one thing I'm very, very excited about. And the fact that for the first time ever, they get to design head to toe. So that's really exciting. And then, oh gosh, the Han Solo movie's coming out. Marvel's Avengers Infinity War collection is coming out.
So cool.
Thank you. It's so cool and it's comfortable, and I'm so excited about that one. Oh gosh, I mean, there's a lot that we have in the works. We're several months ahead. One thing I will say is the 30th anniversary of My Neighbor Totoro. So we're working on a 30th anniversary collection for that. So very excited.
So cool. Would you rather see Captain Kirk become a Jedi or see Luke Skywalker become captain of the Enterprise?
Ooh. I think I'd like to see Luke Skywalker become captain of the Enterprise. I like Captain Kirk, but I've always been a Luke girl. I was a Luke girl over a Han girl, even though I like Han too. But any new story with Luke, I will happily see.
Oh my gosh, Ashley, this is one of our finest moments of fangirling, and it's been such an honor and a pleasure talking with you.
I'm still dying from this story. When we thought that we could make this happen, I had so many emotions going through me. Like, I was at work, and of course, I am on the other side of the country from you. And I literally looked up to see, hypothetically, how could I fly out for one day on a Friday night without missing work? I really couldn't afford to. How could I get time off? It was kind of a no, at least according to my bank account. A part of me was a little bit jealous that you got to meet Ashley, who I have always admired, not just like from everything that she's doing with her universe, but she is my absolute favorite Star Wars character. And Ashley really brought a person like Ahsoka to life. And that just means so much to me. So I was a little bit jealous that you got to meet her and speak with her, but also so proud of where we are and so excited that we were able to ask her these questions and share her stories and her answers with all of our listeners, because I think what she has to say and what she offers to the fangirl community is so important. Yeah, I'm still dying. I love it.
I was so sad that you couldn't be out here with me too, because this interview really happened, I don't want to say on a whim, but we did not expect it to happen. So for which I need to give a huge shout out to Dan, who runs press at Her Universe, as well as Winnie at Her Universe, for making the interview happen and helping everything to go so smoothly on the day of. I know, I was so heartbroken that Kristen couldn't be here with me, because she's the one who introduced Ashley as Ahsoka to me. Ashley, again, is, as you heard, the most gracious and generous guest. And she made a little video for Kristen, which I was so happy.
It was amazing. I loved you. I loved you for it. And I feel like, I don't even know if jealousy is the right word, because I really wasn't. It was like, I'm bummed that I can't be there, but I'm so excited that you're there. Like, I totally lived vicariously through you. And I was just like calling my dad, and who absolutely loves the Clone Wars and Ahsoka. And he was just like, did she speak to Ashley yet? Like, did you tell her that she's a badass?
Kristen's the one who wrote so many of those awesome, intelligent questions that we asked her. I was, again, knee-deep in doing prep for the convention, and since she knows Rebels better than I do, I was like, I need you to take the lead on this, Boo. And
I was more than happy to oblige.
She was just so generous with her time, talking to everyone and taking pictures, and she was so lovely. She was apologizing to me for taking so long, and I was like, well, then I will wait here until midnight to interview you. There is no rush, and I'm a fangirl as well, so I totally get it. I want everyone to have their moment. Again, no one understands better than me.
So thank you again to all the folks at Her Universe for helping make this happen, and to Ashley herself, and to all of our guests, who I loved hearing all of their stories and all of their insight, and we're glad we're able to share them with you.
Yeah, especially since I was like this crazy girl with a microphone running around Artist Alley, where these people are there to work and sell their trades. I'm like, but what do you think about fandom? So a major thank you to Amy M., Chrissy, Amy S., Lindsay, Crystal, and Melissa for taking time out of the convention craziness and Artist Alley to talk with us. Before we leave you, fangirls, we also wanted to give a shout out to another awesome fandom podcast, Always Hold On to Smallville, which goes through the entire series of Smallville, all 10 seasons, episode by episode, and more. I was fortunate enough to be asked to be a guest on last week's episode by super fanboy Zach Moore, the host, where we talk about season 3, episode 7 of the series. The episode is called Magnetic, which is basically, what if a snotty teenage boy got Magneto's powers? So there's your hook. The podcast was so much fun to do, and it's a must listen for any Smallville or Superman fans out there. You can check out the podcast on Apple Podcasts and Podbean, and follow along at Always Smallville, and that's with one S, on Twitter and Facebook.
And we have all of these links to our guests' social media channels and websites on the show notes page of our website, yourbiggestfangirl.com. And as always, we have more content on social media at YBFG Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and Your Biggest Fangirl on Tumblr. And if you're freaking out like I am over the guests, we would love it if you could leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or whatever your favorite podcatcher is. And please don't forget to subscribe.
Toodaloo!
Bye!
Our theme song is the California Lullaby Instrumental by Josh Woodward, used under Creative Commons Attributions 4.0 International License.